Jonathan, good morning.
Good morning. How are you going?
I'm good, thank you. Now, Jonathan, what exactly do these water planets look like?
The short answer is, like a lot of things in science, we don't know yet. So this is all based on observations by the Kepler spacecraft, which was this incredibly successful NASA mission that essentially carried out the first census of exoplanets. It was the equivalent of going door knocking in a city and knocking on every door and trying to figure out how many people live there. You don't learn much about any of the people, you don't learn much about any of the planets, but it can tell you a whole heap about how common planets are, whether the solar system is unique or whether the solar system is a very unusual place. One of the key results that came out of that was the realization that there is a kind of planet in the universe that's incredibly common, for which we have no analog here in the solar system. That's a planet between the size of the Earth and Neptune. There's a big gap in our solar system. Neptune's much more massive than the Earth. It's about 16 times Earth's mass, about 4 times Earth's diameter. So there's this big gulf where there's nothing comparable. But it turns out from Kepler, these planets are everywhere. They're probably one of the most common types of planet there are out in the cosmos.
Well, if they're so common, then how come it's taken so long to find them?
Well, the thing about finding planets around other stars is it's really hard. The analogy I like to use is imagining you stood, I know we're in Sydney here, so on the North Shore in Manly, looking across the harbour to see the lighthouse on the other side. So imagine you stood there and you're trying with your unaided eye to spot little flies flying around the lighthouse beam. That's easier than the challenge we have finding planets around other stars. So when we entered the exoplanet era, when we first started finding these exoplanets, we were far more capable of finding the biggest, the most massive planets and the ones that are closest to their stars. They were the low-hanging fruit. It's like if you're driving, I don't know, to switch metaphors, you're driving through Africa, you're more likely to see the distant elephants than you are a few small flies that are hidden away in the countryside. Same kind of thing. You find the things that are easiest to find first. And the kind of planets Kepler's found, we just couldn't find before that. They were too hard, they're too small, they're too challenging to see. But as we get better, as our technology gets better, as the missions we launch get better, we can push down to smaller planets, ones that are more like the Earth. And that's when we reap this huge harvest of these super Earths or sub-Neptunes, as people describe them.
Right, that's very interesting. Like, I'm always excited whenever they find new planets. And now these planets, they're very different from anything in our solar system, as you've just said before. What causes these planets to be covered in so much water?
I think it boils down to the fact that while we think of water as being quite a scarce and precious resource, and certainly I'm out in rural Queensland here in Toowoomba, we're a couple of hours inland, and it's bone dry here, and we're desperate for water. So we tend to think of water as being kind of rare, kind of unusual. In actuality, water is one of the most common things in the cosmos. Hydrogen is 75% of everything that's out there. It's the most common element by a long, long distance. Oxygen is the third most common element. And if you put them together, you get water. So water is probably the most common solid in the universe, given that it's in the form of ice when it's really, really cold. The reason that the Earth is dry is because we formed close to the sun where the temperature was hot. And so the water wasn't solid. It wasn't ice. And the Earth didn't have enough mass to hoover up the gas that surrounded it, which is what the water was. But if you're further from a star when you're forming, it's colder. You have lots of water ice available, and that's why planets grow more quickly at those distances and why they can hoover up this huge amount of water that we're proposing with these water worlds in this work.
If you've just tuned into The Daily, we're joined by Professor of Astrophysics, Jonathan Horner, discussing NASA's recent discovery of hundreds of planets dominated by water. Now, Jonathan, what else are you expecting to find as part of this mission?
Well, Kepler itself, unfortunately, is pretty much done and dusted. The fuel ran out, it's no longer observing, but it pegged out long enough for its successor to come online, and that's the incredible test mission, the Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite, that was launched earlier this year and is now taking data. It had its first data download a couple of weeks ago, and we're looking forward to getting the first preliminary results from that mission in a couple of weeks' time, probably on around the 5th of September is when we as scientists get told, here are the first alerts, go out and fill your boots. Essentially, what TESS is going to be doing is surveying the whole of the sky over a period of 2 years, looking for more of these transiting planets. Now, where Kepler found a couple of thousand, we think TESS will probably find at least an order of magnitude more than that, so tens of thousands of planets. that's why studies such as the one that's been talked about here are so interesting and so timely. Because what we want to do as scientists is look at what we already know and try and build a model and understanding of the universe, a theory that can explain everything we know and that makes predictions. If this theory is correct, then we should find this, we should find this, we should find this. And this is really timely because they can make predictions based on this study that say, well, TESS should find this many of these kind of planets and they should be around these kind of stars. And then you can go away and test them. And by doing this, by having this interplay between theory, people saying, we think this is how the universe works, and observers who are going out there and saying, this is what we see, you actually get to improve your understanding of the universe and get a better handle on how planets form, how common they are, and to bring it back home, how unusual or how normal the solar system is, how typical the system is.
Right. Now, just one more question for you. I've been dying to ask. What are the chances of potentially finding life on any of these water-dominated planets?
It's always the, you know, million-dollar question. And again, the short answer is until we find life, we don't know whether we ever will or not. I mean, that's the challenge. But I tend to think that with so much real estate out there, it's very unlikely that we are alone, that there is almost certainly going to be life somewhere else in the cosmos. I'm not convinced these planets are necessarily the best place to look, though. Most of them are much more massive than the Earth, much bigger than the Earth. So they're probably more like the ice giants in our solar system, Uranus and Neptune. So they've probably got big, thick atmospheres, which are probably water-rich. The planets in this study are also closer to their stars than the Earth is to the Sun, so they'll be much hotter. So you're talking about a thick, soupy, watery atmosphere sitting on top, potentially an ocean that's hundreds or thousands of kilometers deep. Now, that sounds ideal for life, right? Because you think where there's water, there's life. But the problem is that life also needs a source of nutrients. And on Earth, those nutrients come from the interaction of water with the Earth's crust and with volcanism and things like that. So there are studies that say if you've got a deep enough ocean, whilst there might be life there, that life is probably at the bottom of the ocean. And you wouldn't be able to mix up any of the evidence for that life to the ocean's surface to make it detectable from the kind of interstellar distances we're talking here. So it's not to say these kind of planets, particularly at the smaller end, couldn't be habitable, that they couldn't have life, but rather that if they did have life, it would be incredibly difficult to get any evidence for it. So I don't think these are the best place to look, but they're a step along that line because they do tell us that there is a huge number of planets out there, a huge amount of real estate, and if we keep looking, we'll start finding ones that are much better targets.
Oh, that's a really interesting way I never really thought about. That's why we hadn't found aliens yet. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and hopefully maybe you might find... I know I keep talking about it, but I really want us to find aliens one day. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you very much.